You know, I think ultimately I'm upset with myself. I knew what I was getting into. She's a bitter, unstable person. I mean, the sex was good, which I'm sure was fine for her. But I need more.
Hey, you believe in this?
Excuse me, I was sleeping.
Well, you missed quite a performance.
That's my apple juice.
You know, my last boyfriend, he had a real Croner comprehension problem. You know what I mean? A real cement head.
David, you are so funny.
Yeah, I know.
What are you doing?
It's a long flight, Elaine. I had to get on with my life.
By making time with some floozy across the aisle?
Yeah, that's right. Well, what's going on over there with you and vegetable lasagna?
This guy? Oh, he's an idiot. He doesn't mean anything to me.
I can hear you.
Well, she doesn't mean anything to me either. If it were up to me, we'd still be together.
Well, maybe I feel the same way.
Okay.
Okay, so now what?
Let's make out.
Hello, and welcome to The Place to Be, a Seinfeld podcast. I'm your host, Adam.
And I'm Eric.
On today's episode, we welcome Frank Van Keeken. Frank is a writer, producer, and director who's been involved in several films and TV shows, including My Perfect Landing, Lost and Found Music Studios, The Next Step, Winging It, and Armageddon. But Seinfeld fans will always remember him for playing Magnus, a.k.a. Vegetable Lasagna, in the classic Season 9 episode, The Butter Shave, and we're so glad he can join us today. Thank you for being with us, Frank.
My pleasure.
Well, the pleasure is all ours. Honestly, you are one of the best single-shot characters from the entire series. Everybody knows Vegetable Lasagna, the Seinfeld fan, and we just can't wait to talk to you about it. So can you take us back to that time and tell us how the role first came about?
I auditioned for several roles. I can't remember which one, but Lieberman Hirschfeld was the cast. They were their casting directors, and you know, they liked me enough, I guess, or took pity on me enough to keep bringing me in for roles. And eventually I got that role, which was great. It was a lot of fun. It was a day. I enjoyed getting to shoot on a fake airplane. I thought that was really cool. I love the idea that it was just set up on a soundstage. I thought that was kind of remarkable. It was also one of my first TV roles that I'd done in the States. I moved down from Canada in 96. And I can't remember when I did this, 98, maybe 99, somewhere in there. So yeah, I was excited to do it.
Did you read for Jerry at the audition?
I don't think so. I think it was just such a small part that whoever was producing, I think at the time, it was Alec Berg and Jeff Schaefer, I think, were the two showrunners. I probably read for them. I do remember because, you know, I've gravitated into a writing career since. That's been what I've primarily done over the last 20 years. And even on the set, I ended up hanging out with, I was more curious about the process and hanging out with them than I was hanging out with the actors on the set. Although I did have lunch with Patrick Warburton. We went out and there was a shrimp place at lunchtime that we went out to. And I forgot for some reason, I either left it back in my dressing room or maybe I forgot it for the day, but I forgot my wallet and Putty basically bought me lunch, which I still owe him a lunch.
And getting back to your audition, obviously you have that great accent throughout the episode. So was that something that you came with at the audition or was that part of your character's description? Where did that come from?
I can't say for sure. I probably just brought that. I think because the character was described as, you know, an immigrant, I think that's just sort of some, you know, vague middle European accent that I put on. I probably brought that to the audition. I don't think they asked.
And we read that Julia was on maternity leave for the filming of this episode. So they actually had to shoot all of your scenes 2 weeks later. So did any part of the filming feel different at all compared to a typical day working on a sitcom?
I mean, I was just there the one day and, you know, there was no audience. It was just single camera shooting. And we and the stuff we shot outside as well was, it was, I don't know if regarding her maternity leave or her situation with that, but it seemed to me like a normal shoot.
Were you there for the entire day or was it just a few hours?
I think it was a full day. I think it was like, it might have been two, but I think we did it all in one day. Because I was just in, you know, there's the setup in the plane, which is basically one setup. So once they had that all rigged and lit, it was pretty easy for them to shoot all that out. Then there was, I think there was stuff in a cab, which we shot on the Radford lot. They dressed up a building that was, you know, production office building to make it look like it was the airport. They just put up some signage. And I think the cab pulls up, we get in, and then it drives off, or we do our lines, and then it drives off. So there were basically just two setups. So my suspicion is we that was all just one day.
Did you have a lot of time to rehearse on the set, or did you work on most of your stuff ahead of time?
If you're just a day player, you're supposed to have your stuff figured out. You can't, you're there to, you know, your job, you want to do a good job. You don't want to cause any trouble. You want to have everything as figured out as possible. I mean, and I suffer from being almost completely unable to memorize lines, no matter what they are, anything I've ever done. I've been mostly terrified that I wouldn't remember stuff, even short scenes. When I was a stand-up, I could remember a whole hour worth of material, but it's some weird mental block. And so mostly I was, you know, making sure I just had my lines down. That's all I wanted to do. So you don't have, you know, you don't have the latitude to, you know, work stuff out. It's an expensive show to shoot, and you just want to do a good job. So no, I came as prepared as I could. I mean, obviously you want to take any directions that they might have for the character, but no one said anything to me. So I figured I was either doing such a horrible job they were going to cut it, or I was doing a good job.
And this was actually the premiere episode of the 9th season, which made it one of the highest rated episodes of the series. So were you nervous at all or intimidated when you first arrived on the set?
Well, I didn't know when that episode would air when I was shooting it. I did know that I was on a very successful show, and I wanted to do a good job. So I think it wasn't nervousness over being on Seinfeld. It was just, you know, the abject terror of an actor showing up on a set wanting to do a good job.
Right, of course.
So the first scene you have in this episode is when Elaine wakes you up and she starts drinking your apple juice. And I know Seinfeld focuses on every detail. So was apple juice always the drink in the script, or did they try a few different takes?
No, that was it. I don't remember them going, oh, try, you know, Snapple. I think it was always that. And also, I would imagine, you know, the producers probably heard me do, I mean, obviously had heard me do the lines in rehearsal, and you know, maybe I was getting a bit of a laugh on that in when I was auditioning, not the rehearsal, sorry, when I was auditioning. So, you know, maybe they saw fit to keep the line. That we didn't seem on that episode, there wasn't a lot of, I don't remember anyway, a lot of improvising. And I mean, my background is as an improviser, but, you know, again, you know, new to Hollywood actor, I'm not going to go, oh, let's try this. I'm just happy to, you know, whatever you want me to do, tell me where to stand and I'll do it.
And you mentioned earlier that you talked to some of the writers like Alec Berg and Jeff Schaefer. So do you remember what you talked about with them?
No, other than, you know, I was keen on the process of writing, and most of my career, I mean, you know, I'm a crappy actor at the end of the day. I have a very narrow band. I can, you know, play these sort of nut jobs, But, you know, there's never, like, you know, when I wake up in the morning, this sort of idea of like, oh, one day I'm going to get an Emmy, that never enters my head. So for me, I was just fascinated by the process of writing sitcom. And I've done a lot of that. I mean, I think after that, yeah, after that, I went and I wrote on Mad About You. And there was an episode I shot that I got to go to, was one of the few writers that got to go to New York. And there was an episode that, that Jerry was on. And I remember talking to him briefly on the day, cause he was just there for half a day. And, I remember asking him, I said, are you ever going to do another sitcom? And, he said, no. And I said, why not? And he said, cause I know what it means to do one. And, over the years, I've been a showrunner myself, and yeah, I really know what that means now. It's very thankless. It's a very, very hard job to do well, and to do it for year after year after year. So there's a little Seinfeld tidbit. When he did the A Mad About You episode, about a year later, I think I was on that show as a writer, and that was my first writing gig. In Hollywood.
Nice. And getting back to your episode, you also have that scene later on when you overhear Elaine telling Putty that, you know, you're an idiot and you mean nothing to her. And then you're like, I can hear you. But you don't seem to have an accent when you deliver that line. So was that your choice to deliver the line that way? Or was that?
No. So I'll tell you what this shows my naivete in the process. I was such a neophyte. And I literally remember asking, am I in the shot? And like, because I thought it was just a two shot of Putty and Elaine. And they said, I'm not in the shot. So I didn't think I was actually on camera. Like, I didn't think it was just going to be about them and they pick up my line. Or that's how much of an idiot I was. So I didn't do it in character. So that's literally what's going on there. Bad acting. And I could have very happily come back and dubbed it, but maybe they thought it was close enough. But yeah,
I think
good eye.
Yeah, it's something I don't think you necessarily pick it up on like a first watch, but you hear it a few times, you notice it. But it's not that big, but it's something that's always been, you know, kind of Seinfeld lore. Like, why does vegetable lasagna lose his accent right there?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's the reason. Bad acting. I didn't think I was on camera, and I didn't know that even if you weren't, you should still continue to act. That's how new I was to it.
Well, your next scene is one of our favorites from the episode, so we're actually going to play the clip real quick, and then we'll talk about it.
You want something to read?
No.
Well, are you going to take a nap? Or
no.
You just going to sit there, staring at the back of the seat?
Oh, tell me about it. I don't know why I ever took you back.
Oh, please. I took you back. You know it. I know it. Vegetable lasagna here knows it.
Please. I don't want to get involved.
Oh, I hope a giant mountain rises out of the ocean and we just ram right into it and end this whole thing.
Oh, God.
Ow.
So I know from the DVDs that there were some great bloopers between Julia and Patrick during this scene. So what was that like for you sitting next to them during all that?
Again, for me, I'm just happy to be there. And I'm such a neophyte at the process. I hadn't done much before. And again, always little small parts that I'd done back in Canada. So I was just, like I said, happy to be there and really just focused on trying to do a good job. And just be in character as much as I could. I was just sort of, You know, my background is improvisational. I did a little bit of Second City and a whole bunch of theater sports. And, it's really about trying to stay in the scene as much as possible. And that's all that I was, be in the moment is all I was trying to do.
I don't like to read on planes.
Jerry, shut up.
You could also hear Jerry laughing in the background during those bloopers. So did you get to talk to him at all that day?
Yeah, he was showrunner, I think, at the time. And I think Alec and Jeff were sort of, probably running the room and helping him produce. So, yeah, I remember, talking with him as well as with the others.
Oh, Jason and Michael were there too?
It was Jason. I don't think Michael was there. But yeah, okay. Jason. It was Jason. I remember at some break hanging out with it was Jerry and Elaine and Jason. We were just at craft services talking. Maybe he was in for a costume fitting. I can't remember. But I do remember him being there.
All right, well, we have one more clip to play for you, and then we'll ask you about it.
Hello?
Jerry.
Hey, Lainey, how's the trip going?
Oh, it's awful.
This trip was a huge mistake. Huge!
Please stop shouting. I can't take it.
Who is that?
It's vegetable lasagna.
Who?
Vegetable lasagna.
My name is Magnus.
Shut up, or I'll snap you in half and stuff you in the overhead.
Get me some duty-free Kahlua.
How was the trip?
Sounded good.
So when we hear your voices on the other end of the phone, where did you record those lines with Julia? Was that like separate from that scene?
I don't remember doing any ADR, so we probably picked that up. Right on the set. They would have probably just brought a boom mic in and whatever those lines were, we would have done them.
Oh, okay. So that's probably where you saw Jason because he was in that scene too. But getting back to Julia and Patrick, what would you say was your biggest takeaway from working with them that day?
Oh, it was pretty wonderful. You know, they don't need to talk to anyone, but they do. They did because there's, I guess, just a general kindness to them that was great, matter of fact, even Patrick, I ended up later on, I wrote a pilot. It was called Johnny Incorrigible. I'd written this little sitcom. I was with Brillstein Gray was trying to sell it. And Patrick came on board to play Johnny. And so we did a big table reading and Brillstein Gray got all these actors to show up and read for it. And we didn't end up selling the show, but we developed a bit of a friendship there. And also, like I said, I forgot my wallet and he bought me some shrimp at lunch. So it was also, I just felt very excited and happy. But I also, I'm a day player. I'm not going to, I'm not going to insinuate myself very much in their existences. They've got their stuff to do. So, like I said, I'm just happy to be there. So I would have been very casual and it would have just been some small talk.
Do you have a favorite scene you were in or a favorite line that you said?
I guess that was my apple juice. There is a sort of a kind of plaintive ache in that line of this immigrant character, just sort of so sad over his apple juice being taken. I think that line, it's probably got the most response from any, anytime anyone's, talked to me about the show.
What did you enjoy the most about playing that character?
Well, and here's something that's little known, but they liked me enough to bring me back, and I ended up doing another episode, but I got cut out of it. I was on the backwards episode where they were in India. I think they were at a wedding, and they were playing it backwards. I don't know if you remember that episode or not.
Of course, yeah.
Well, I'm on the plane in that episode. I'm sitting next to Elaine. And I can't remember my line. I think she pulls a pillow from behind my head. She gets angry and wakes me up, if I remember. And then I say, I was sleeping, or something to that effect. So I was so excited. And there was some talk of bringing me back every time they were on a plane. But then I got a note actually from, I don't know if it came through casting or directly to me from the showrunners, but they said that the episode was like really long. Like we're at, I think it, they might've been at 30 odd minutes and they needed to cut it down to 22. And so they said, we're going to have to lose the scene, but they really thought it was great. But anyway, that's a little Seinfeld tidbit that probably no one knows about.
That's pretty cool. Do you have any other stories about working on that episode?
Well, mostly being excited to be there and just soaking in this whole process of how it was done. It was just very exciting to me. And I think they had a different plane. It was a big plane or something. You know, it's just and that was very quick. I think I was in and out very quickly for the second day.
And speaking of deleted scenes, the nickname Vegetable Lasagna, I assume, is because you ordered vegetable lasagna on the plane, but we never actually see you order it. So was there a scene that got cut from that episode?
No. I think that was, you know, when you think about it, it's kind of clever writing because they're making an assumption about another scene or an idea about what it is to be on a plane, like the kind of food you would order. So in a weird way, it's kind of clever writing to sort of hint at a scene that was never shot. I remember when I originally read that, trying to understand that, I remember going, oh, I probably had vegetable lasagna earlier in the flight. But no, there wasn't a scene.
Because there's also some fan theories out there, like on Reddit, that suggests Elaine calls you vegetable lasagna because you're wearing a green shirt, but I'm guessing it's not necessarily something that specific, right?
No, I think it was, that's what I ordered.
Yeah, that sounds about right. You're right. It is really clever writing. It's to go that extra layer of Seinfeld where she sees him order that. So it's like, oh, that's what I'm going to call him. And it's just, you know, you say your name too, which makes it even funnier. You know, my name is Magnus and she doesn't even care.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite memory or story from your time on the show?
Well, just the day. The day was great. You know, I came to Hollywood from Canada and, you know, wanted to do comedy and to be cast in one of the, you know, arguably one of the best sitcoms ever, one of the most popular. That was really meaningful to me. Even afterward, I remember over the years, you know, I've been able to think fondly of that time. I did an episode of I got cast on the Larry Sanders Show, and I was supposed to play a grip from the set, and Larry had locked himself in a closet, and I was supposed to come up and knock on the door and ask for like a number two gel, and he slides it back under the door and I walk away. And I remember doing the scene, rehearsing the scene, and then there was a kind of a conversation, and then they cut the scene. And I remember Gary, I was, you know, brought over to Gary, and he said, it's not you, it's us. We don't need the scene. We're going to cut the scene and we're going to make it up to you. So sorry about it. And then I went home. So like I'd auditioned for the role and I got the role and then we rehearsed it. And then I went home. So I never even shot it. And that might have happened before the Seinfeld episode. So I found that as an actor just very confusing. Like, was it me? Were they just being polite? Like, why wouldn't they just shoot the scene and cut it later? But, you know, again, why waste the time, especially that late in the series run, to appease the anxiety of a day player? So I think I had that in my head a little bit, like, what is this? This is crazy. And then to come into the Seinfeld set, and it was very friendly and relaxed. My biggest memories in thinking about it is it was just very relaxed. Now, that might not have been behind the scenes, or could have been incredibly late hours in the writing room, but the shooting process was very relaxed. And that was probably the most memorable for me.
Were you happy with how all your scenes turned out in the episode?
Oh, yeah. I do remember watching the premiere and being very excited. And obviously, because you don't know, you know, you're just in the scene. You don't know how it's going to be, if it's going to turn out, how well it's going to go. So I remember watching the episode when it first came out and being pleased. I remember thinking, oh, I did a good job. I didn't disappoint anyone. And then when they asked me to do another one, you know, even though I got cut from it, I remember also going, oh, I must have done an okay job. If they're asking me to come back, that's a good thing. And I found that was hopeful making, you know, when you're starting out as an actor.
Besides getting invited back to do another episode, what would you say was the best compliment you ever received about playing Vegetable Lasagna?
Well, you know, when if a fan comes up to you and remembers you and is excited to see you, wants to take a picture with you, then you have affected their life in a way, like you've given them a good memory. And so those interactions always were joyful for me, because on some level, some, you know, idiot character that I played made someone happy enough to want to reach out and connect. And that's kind of cool, you know, because you do it in a vacuum, right? You're on set. You don't know. Your whole thing could get cut like it did on the second episode. Then no one will ever know. But to actually have something that you did, as small as it was, go out into the world, and then have someone go, oh, you're that guy. Can I get a picture with you? That's kind of cool, you know, that you've affected their life in a way, made them happy.
Absolutely. And before we move on to our final segment, is there anything we didn't ask you or any other stories you'd like to share with us from your time on Seinfeld?
No, I think you're getting it all.
All right, great. So before we let you go, we're just going to move on to our final segment. It's called This, That, and the Other. So basically, we just ask you a question, and the first thing that comes to mind, you let us know.
Sure.
So first question, what is your favorite film?
Probably Being There with Peter Sellers.
Oh, I love that movie.
1979.
Great pick. Just curious, do you have a favorite line or scene from that movie?
I think him, Chauncey, sitting with Melvin Douglas's character, and I think it's Jack Douglas as the president, and he's sort of explaining how there will be growth in the spring. And Jack, I think it's Jack Leonard, sort of confused as hell over what he's talking about. I quite like that. And then some of the ways even he walked, there's a kind of stiffness to his gait that I thought was kind of cool. I mean, the whole movie overall was pretty amazing. And you know, it came from the Jerzy Kaczynski book. And, you know, most books don't incorporate, or most movies don't incorporate everything that's in the book or do it in a really good way. And I think this is an example of that movie, of really getting the book right.
Definitely.
Favorite band or musician?
A big fan of Jonathan Richman. He used to be Jonathan Richman in The Modern Lovers. I've seen him a bunch of times. And Springsteen's pretty cool in terms of bands. I would say those two.
Do you have a favorite Springsteen song?
I remember I brought my daughter when she was around six to see a Springsteen concert in Rochester. And to get into the pit, which is that area up front where you get to be really close to the stage, you have to line up at around 2 p.m. and they give everyone these armbands. So some 1,500 to 2,000 people will line up. And then around 5 o'clock, they pull a number. And then from that number back, around 300 or 400 people, they all get to go into the pit. And so we all got armbands and we were waiting. And my daughter is one of the reasons we moved back to Santa Monica, to Los Angeles, because she wants to pursue acting. And she's a really good singer. She just turned 16 and she wants to have a musical career. And so I said, you know, I'm going to take you to see this concert. Again, she's like 6 or 7 at the time, and maybe 10, somewhere around there. And so we wait till 5 o'clock and they pull her number. And that is a rare event. I talked to people who had seen 50, 60, 70 Springsteen concert, never had their number pulled. And so she is first in and gets to be right up front on and, you know, our hands are on the stage. And this is during the River tour, and he plays The River, I think that's the song, on his harmonica. And after the song, he gives the harmonica to my daughter. And then later on, he gives her his guitar pick. And then Steve Van Zandt also, I remember one point, is playing guitar, looking at her, dancing, and he just smiles at her. And at the end of the song, hands her a guitar pick. And I remember sort of thinking it was sort of like the gods of rock and roll maybe passing a baton on to her, sort of blessing her, saying, you go for it, kid. So maybe that song.
Very cool.
That's such a cool story. What do you enjoy the most, writing, producing, acting, or directing?
I think writing. I've learned to become a reasonably good director, mostly so that when we hire directors on a show that I'm doing, that they don't take advantage. They don't say, oh, I want to do it this way. So that I'm aware of what they're doing so that I get the coverage I need so I can edit the episode in post where I'm not stuck in an editing bay going, I can't, what am I going to do? I have to cut to a vase now? Like, how am I going to make this scene work? So, and production, when you're producing on set, it's so hard to be a showrunner. It's just such a hard, thankless job. And when you're in the writing room, everything is still theoretical. It's still this, you know, you have this idea of what you want this episode to be. So it's at like 100%. And then just, you know, compromise after compromise occurs to the point that, you know, it's being sent out into the ether to be seen by people. Just a million compromises. An actor doesn't show up that day. You don't get this set. You can't shoot past a certain time because another actor's pumpkined. Whatever the issues are, they just serve to basically decrease the initial impulse and idea that you had there. So for me, being in the writing room is the best. And I used to be a stand-up. I was a stand-up for 15 years. And one of the greatest moments of being a stand-up is afterward, when you would go to some diner and you would just sit there and listen to these other stand-ups tell their stories about their road gigs and the horror stories or something funny that happened to them. And there was such a kind of a wonderfulness, a kind of a sense of community. And there's something similar when you're in a writing room. It's you know, it's there's 10 people sitting there trying to figure out stories, and they're all just such bright minds. They often come at reality from very different places, but the ideas that they come up with are just, it just, they're breathtaking sometimes. So to be in that environment in the writing room is for me the best.
Favorite story working on the set of a film or TV show?
I'd written this one scene, or the writing room had written a scene, and the actress doing the scene was having trouble with it. And I said, you know, don't worry about it. And we truncated the speech. We you know, it was like this giant monologue, and we reduced it to 5 lines, and then they did it. And they said, can I do it again? And I said, well, we'll do it again some other time, but we got to move on. And this is great. And it was another month or two later, like we only had another week or so of shooting left. And she came up to me and she said, when am I going to get to do the scene again? And I said, what? You said I could do the scene again. And it's just in my head. I said, what do you mean? And she started to do the whole monologue, like the big long one. So I literally said, go get in the right costume. And we redid, like we shot the scene again so she could do it. And I used the shorter version, but boy, I admired her for not wanting to give up. Like it was still bugging her that she didn't get it right. This was a 15-year-old actress. What a level of professionalism. And then the second thing it really taught me was, you know, I used to be a little more precious about the words that I had written or that the writing room had written. And that's all gone out the window. If an actor can, and some might say, oh, this is a huge transgression to writing. But if they can get the essence of what the lines are in a better way, especially if you're writing for younger people, like, you know, I have no business writing for a 13-year-old. That's almost a different language. So sometimes they'll find a way to say stuff that's just so much better than you could have imagined. And that was one of the lessons that I learned from that process. Like if the actor is having trouble saying the lines, it's the writing, generally not the actor. Change the lines.
So besides Julia, if you could go back and have a scene with one of the other Seinfeld cast members, who would it be and why?
I can imagine my character could be very confounding for Jason. Where it would be good grist for the mill of him, you know, getting upset over my inanity. So maybe a scene with him.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Like maybe he's having his apartment repainted and I'm the guy coming in to paint it, and my peculiar middle European ways of painting or prepping just make him nuts. Or it just, you know, it's endlessly going on. Something like that would be cool.
Oh, love it. Who was the most intimidating actor or director you've ever worked with?
I have never found any of them intimidating. You know, even I remember hearing about Michael Bay being a difficult director. And I remember doing Armageddon with him. I thought he was fantastic. Like the guy had such responsibility. I remember watching him directing. He was directing 5 cameras on 2 different sound stages. I remember looking at it going, what, how? And he was just so open to any good idea. And, you know, that would be someone who supposedly people had found difficult, but not me. So I don't know that there'd be anyone. They all want you to be great. You know, and that's the thing about show business. Everyone ideally just wants it to be great. So if you bring your game and you try to be great, I think it generally works out. You could still not make it work. I think so many people have tried, there have been attempts to make, you know, movies that just didn't work, but they were trying. I don't think there's anyone not trying. So as long as you're sort of bringing your game, I think it works out.
And final thing, favorite moment of your career?
Another show that I created, it's called The Next Step. It's a dance show for tweens. And we ended up shooting an episode in England on the CBBC sets. And we actually got to shoot on a show called Blue Peter. And Blue Peter has been around since, I think, the 40s or 50s. It's like the longest running show, kid show anyway, in the world ever. And if you're a kid, you can get a Blue Peter badge by, you know, you send in a piece of art or something like that. But the only way for an adult to get a Blue Peter badge is to be on the show. Well, I was directing the episode where we shot on the show. I wasn't technically on the show, but it was close enough for the crew to give me a Blue Peter badge. And whenever I go to like any award ceremony, I always wear my little Blue Peter badge, because it's a sort of a testament to making great television for young audiences, which is sort of what I've done over the last, you know, dozen years. So I would almost say, and especially after such a long day of shooting, I was so tired, and it was pretty hectic, and we were jumping around a lot of locations. When they presented me with a Blue Peter badge, I remember going, this is as good as an Academy Award for me. So maybe that moment.
Well, Frank, Adam touched on it at the top of the show, but you really are one of our favorite single shot characters from the entire series. In fact, we did an episode all about the greatest one episode characters. And of course, you were one of the first ones we mentioned. So this was a huge thrill for us. And we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Well, you're very kind. And it was my pleasure.
Well, the pleasure was all ours. And again, thank you so much. And even though you said, you know, you only had a few lines, it doesn't matter. You know, even if you only have one line or one scene, you're such an important part of Seinfeld. And you are truly just such a memorable and beloved part of Seinfeld. And you did such a great job. We just really appreciate you coming and talking to us about it.
Yeah, again, thank you so much. It was a blast to do. And I was honored and still am honored to have been a part of that show.
Well, thanks again, Frank. We hope you enjoy the rest of your night. And thanks for all the laughs. Take care.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email us at theplacetobeseinfeld@gmail.com. You can also find our show on Facebook at The Place to Be, a Seinfeld podcast, Twitter at TPTBSeinfeld, and Instagram at theplacetobe.podcast. You can find our show on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, and Apple Podcasts. And if you'd like, please rate and review. It really helps us out. Until next time, be sure to hang up your pants for the perfect crease.
David, this has been the worst month of my life, and if I never see you again, it'll be too soon.
Ditto.
Oh, that's original.
Gotta
help. 86 and Broadway, please.
I'm sorry, lady. There's a cab shortage. The transit police are making everyone shit.
Oh, no.
Hello?
Oh, no. I'm sorry.